Radio for Acadiana, KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Good afternoon and welcome to Louisiana Focus, a production of the Communication Department at the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. I'm Seneca Broussard.
And I'm Nick Pierre. In today's program, we'll hear about how Louisiana's debate over traffic cameras has been reignited after some big questions are raised about their legality. Also, new technology will lead to new ways to get textbooks.
New Orleans is on the rebound, but something is still missing in the Crescent City. And the University of Louisiana at Lafayette has a new women's basketball coach. We'll introduce you.
Spring means Festival International in Lafayette, but it also means new features for music fans.
The battle of the brands for college sports apparel is hitting close to home. Plus, disturbing war photos have created controversy among professional journalists. These stories and more up in a minute. A proposed law against programs such as SafeSpeed reignited a controversy in the Capitol over whether speed cameras and vans should fine motorists in our state. Rebecca Wilson has the story.
14 intersections in Lafayette have safe speed cameras and a website to view unlucky drivers who have their pictures taken by them. Safe speed cameras and vans are meant to observe and record motorists speeding or violating other traffic rules. The controversial banter around Lafayette and around the state shows people's feelings are intense.
Honestly, I think that the reason they're there is just to get money.
I think it's just a big brother is watching you type of tool.
I hate them because I've had to pay one of these fines, and I know the money doesn't even go to the city of Lafayette.
The program is intended to prevent crashes by enforcing the speed limit while allowing police officers to focus on other crimes.
I think it could prevent accidents because, like, when people get to, like, red lights and stuff, they'll slow down.
If anything, I think it promotes the occurrence of accidents because people will slam on their brakes.
Lafayette District Attorney Mike Harson sees the benefits of having a speed van capturing images of speeders in local neighborhoods.
Matter of fact, one reporter told me one time that they had done some research and supposedly that the area near my home was the second or third highest rate of tickets. My wife loves it because when it's around, the cars drive a lot slower than they usually do.
One added benefit is that the camera not only catch red light violations, but criminals.
You know, they could catch people, like, trying to rob someplace.
No. What are they taking the speed cam to catch the dude that robbed the convenience store? I've never heard of that happening.
The camera at the intersection of University and Simcoe was used by police to locate a stolen vehicle. This crime is only one of several solved with the help of these cameras. But opponents say no matter what help these cameras provide, the speeding cameras could be made illegal.
Speeding cams are illegal?
According to a proposed law, police officers would be authorized to monitor speeding violations from their cars, but the law states it shall not be construed to allow them to record vehicles in violation of traffic safety laws to be mailed at a later date. Lafayette District Attorney Mike Carson says that the court has not declared it unconstitutional.
It was adopted by an ordinance of the city. Any law passed is presumed to be valid until declared otherwise by a court. So until then, I'd have to say it's legal and constitutional.
In May, legislative opponents and supporters will have their chance to advocate their ideas by voting on the proposed law against speed cameras and vans. For Louisiana Focus, I'm Rebecca Wilson.
Students will soon have time to rejoice when all their textbooks can be read from one device. Seth Chanson has more.
One of the biggest problems confronting college students is the cost of textbooks, and it is also a problem for the business itself. In January, ULF Yet students were surprised to see one of their alternatives for book buying, Follett's, had gone out of business. Senior Trey Queen says he had no idea Follett's was in trouble.
Well, I was surprised because every day when I would go in there, and I did go in there almost every single day, it was always packed. There were always people in there buying stuff.
The disappearance of Follett's is due to more alternatives like textbook rentals and online buys now more readily available to students. Senior John Bruyette says he for years has found it more efficient to order his textbooks online.
I go on Amazon mainly because the prices are cheaper. I can buy used books way cheaper than the bookstore even after shipping. And recently I have, thanks to my Kindle, I've been able to get textbooks, a digital version of my textbook, which makes a lighter load and it was cheaper than the actual textbook in physical form.
Thomas Moe, the acting associate director for the UL Lafayette University Bookstore, says digital textbooks are not yet as in demand on campus like you might think.
It's something we looked into doing digital. It's something I think we're going to look into really pushing in the next few years coming up. Trend switching to digital. I think we'll see it coming, you know. I think we'll see a few more students use it. But the big switch, you know, I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Senior Seth Fungi says he is ready for the digital switch to happen.
If it was available next semester, every book I'd buy would be digital copy. I wouldn't deal with all these hard copies. I'd leave them all in the bookstore and just go straight digital. So that way, it'd be easier for me, and I wouldn't have to go through buying all the books and then selling them back, because I'm never going to need those books again.
The digital age on UL Lafayette's campus is not quite here yet. Mo says that hard copies of media and text will surely be around for at least a little while longer.
If that does come into play, I don't see it happening anytime soon. Look at the music business. I mean, they have iTunes and stuff like that, but, I mean, they still sell CDs. There's still CDs in the Best Buy. And, I mean, you can still buy CDs online. And the same for the movie business.
Even though digital media is on the rise, the university bookstore attributes only about 2% of sales to digital-only textbooks at this time. For Louisiana Focus, I'm Seth Shaston.
Seven years after Hurricane Katrina, how is New Orleans overcoming the obstacles? Nick Pierre gives us the details.
Post-Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans not only rebuilt, but became better than before with new tourism and entrepreneurial spirit. In 2011, BusinessInsider.com named New Orleans number one for the worst economic recovery in America. But with the Crescent City breaking records that same year, with 8.75 million visitors and spending $5.97 billion, the city is looking forward to a turnaround. Local musician Jeremy Benoit credits the city's unique culture for the economic recovery.
There's Bourbon Street, and as you know, Bourbon Street is world-renowned. That street brings in more commerce to Louisiana than probably most other cities in this state do annually. Everybody knows the name Bourbon Street, and it's a hot spot. It's a main tourist attraction. A lot of people go there, and that breeds music, that breeds musicians, a lot of different musicians to come and try their hand and play there. Some actually work full-time on that one street, which I think is amazing that somebody can work one area that much, and, you know, that's all they do.
Best is yet to come for New Orleans tourism, with the city to host the 2013 Super Bowl and the NBA All-Star Game in 2014.
Because of the catastrophe that occurred, a lot more celebrities were looking at New Orleans, a lot more musicians and activists, people who wanted to help. New Orleans was brought to their attention. And also, there were a lot of other entities that took interest in New Orleans because of Hurricane Katrina. It's not that far removed from people's minds. And it's also worked in the favor of not only the city of New Orleans, but the state of Louisiana, in that there was so much aid and relief that was brought. And that has grown the real estate of the city of New Orleans indefinitely.
For Louisiana Focus, I'm Nicholas Pierre.
Get out of that bed, wash your face and hands.
With a new head coach, the women's basketball team is making some changes for next year. Chris Seaman has the story.
Basketball is my favorite sport. I like the women to run up and down the court. Just like I turn off the microphone.
As you may know, basketball season for the 2012 school year has ended recently in the past month or so. But what you may not know is that the ULL women's basketball team is already progressing towards success for next year by signing new head coach and former alumni, Gary Broadhead.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be back here because, you know, I ran track here years ago, and to come back to the university that I love and the job that I always wanted, it's excited for me and my family and stuff.
The man who hired Coach Broadhead, Director of Athletics Scott Farmer, is sure that Coach Broadhead is the perfect man for the job.
You know, throughout the process, Gary Broadhead kept rising to the top. We went and do an interview here, do an interview there, and then Gary Broadhead would rise to the top.
Coach Broadhead said that one thing this team needs is better play on the defensive side of the ball.
Well, I think for sure we're going to bring some intensity on the defense. You know, we're going to try to change our work ethic, and we've had a couple of individual workouts already, and, you know, we can see that we need to change that. You know, we need to get these kids working harder and smarter, work more on fundamentals, and, you know, develop players. We're going to have to develop. And then also our recruiting, you know, we're going to recruit probably a different kind of kid.
Signing day for women's college basketball was only a couple of weeks ago, and Coach Broadhead got an opportunity to pick up some new recruits.
We signed two kids. We signed Byronisha Santiago. She's actually from Ruston, Louisiana, but she was playing at Lawn Morris Junior College, and that's the region 14 junior college. It's the best probably region in the country, and she was 6'1". She's a forward, finesse kind of player that can score and rebound. We also signed Ashley Benjamin, which is also a junior college kid out of Houston, Texas. She played at Tyler Junior College, and she's a defensive specialist. We felt that we needed to bring in a defensive player, and her strength is the defense. She can guard anybody on the floor from the 1 to 5.
When Coach Broadhead was asked if he thought the women's basketball team can make it to the NCAA tournament this year, he replied, "This year will be tough, but 2 or 3 years from now, who knows?" Louisiana Focus, I'm Chris Keene.
One of the best festivals in the world was right here in our backyard this past weekend. Ellen Hopper tells us more.
On Wednesday, April 25th, 2012, Festival International kicked off right here in the heart of downtown Lafayette, Louisiana, and continued until Sunday, April 29th. This festival is known all over the world, even winning the About.com Music Festival Award, making this the greatest music festival in the world. The whole mission of Festival is to create a celebration of our culture here in Louisiana while educating the public. For Apio Abala, the marketing coordinator for Festival International, it's not as much about the music as it is about our roots.
It's bringing the world to Festival and bringing Festival to the world.
The festival is constantly changing and updating to reach a greater number of people. This year, the festival incorporated a scavenger hunt, which takes you through every part of the festival. They also incorporated a Louisiana craft beer garden, which gives an opportunity to taste local beers that are made right here in Louisiana.
There's a lot of things to be excited about.
One thing to be excited about is that this festival attracts people from all areas of the globe. And the main reason for this is the music. Some of the performers this year were Gary Clark Jr., Radio Radio, Rusted Roots, Sean Bruce, Teyada, and Fights. This festival would never happen without the help of many volunteers who look forward to the festival all year long. For UL senior Catherine Maloney, she can't wait to be a part of it all.
This is my first year volunteering for the festival, and I'm really excited about it. And I've never done a festival before, so I'm not sure what to expect, but I'm sure it'll be fun.
Whether you came out and volunteered or you just wanted to have a little fun, Festival Weekend was one of the best weekends in Lafayette. So until next year, y'all, happy festival. For Louisiana Focus, I'm Ellen Hopper.
Cancer is a major health concern for many Americans. Bree Foreman has more about how the Relay for Life, an American Cancer Society, is trying to find a cure.
Relay for Life is a life-changing event that gives everyone in communities across the globe a chance to celebrate the lives of people who have battled cancer, remember those loved ones lost, and fight back against the disease. The health concern of cancer is quite familiar to Tyler Rajur, along with the 3.5 million Americans who also know loss of family members due to cancer. That is why the industrial engineer took the time this weekend to compete in a womanless pageant.
For the Relay for Life, I'm going to be a contestant in the Womanless Pageant in order to raise money for cancer awareness. The reason I'm participating in the Womanless Pageant is to help raise awareness for cancer. And I feel that cancer is a big deal in our society that takes a lot of victims each year. And I know from personal experience, because I've lost 3 family members to cancer, so I feel that this is a good way to help contribute to the issue.
The Womanist Pageant gave young men like Tyler a chance to strut their stuff on stage while wearing dresses, makeup, and high heels, all to collect money in honor of the ones they've lost. Denise Turner, an accountant at the Bank of ERAF, along with her staff, are one of the many businesses that put together fundraisers throughout the year in order to help put an end to cancer.
We have a tent set up. So far, we've raised over $3,000. We've had jambalaya, plate lunch sale. We've done a bake sale in the branch. We do raffle tickets, and then we'll be selling treats that night at Relay.
Relay for Life is now a global movement that works alongside the American Cancer Society in order to generate cancer awareness, outreach, and income in 23 countries around the world. They hold events all year round that last up to 24 hours and state they will not sleep until cancer is cured. For Louisiana Focus, I'm Bree Foreman.
The University of Louisiana at Lafayette has been making changes to school apparel, but a key problem has been selecting the retailer to supply the merchandise. Brock Bertuzzi with the story.
Quality, comfortability, durability, brand name, and price. These are all the things that run through a consumer's mind right before they buy something. And here at the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, that's exactly what the students want to see change in. Associate Director of Trademark Licensing Matthew Tarver and freshman student Brock Sonier both got a chance to tell me what their plans were for the way that they changed the branding and merchandise here at the university and their thoughts on how a consumer thinks before they buy something.
The students that have come have been real forthcoming with their opinions about things they'd like to see in terms of different kinds of merchandise, the particular logos that they might like or don't like, where they buy things, how they buy things, why they buy things. In terms of colors, you know, red, of course, is what rules us here, but when we were talking about an alternate game color, they kept saying that if they had to pick between red, black, and white for an alternate color, since red is already there, they were leaning towards black as an alternate kind of game day event or blackout or whatever you want to call it. The other things that we were hearing were price, obviously, kind of controls where they buy. I think the biggest concern that they had that we can implement is getting more things online, available online, and be able to shop online. You know, there's some limitations with the bookstore's website now, but we're going to try to expand that. This was a little bit of a surprise, but they honestly like more simple designs with logos and with graphics on shirts. Simple things is what they're after. Just the university's logo on a clean shirt. They don't want a whole lot of complicated designs. And a lot of the reason they were saying that is they want something they can wear multiple years. So they're not going to be buying a whole lot of clothes every year because of budgets and the way expenses are for some students. So they want something that they could wear several years, I'm guessing. Based on the manufacturer, the thing we kept hearing from students was Under Armour. And that's probably what they're looking for, but it's also who's made the most inroads in terms of college merchandise, if that's answering the question. Nike used to be college across the country, and now Under Armour, the last 3 or 4 years, has stepped up the amount of stuff that they have and kind of made some competition there, where there is an opportunity for students to get really good quality stuff that's going to last a while but not be really expensive, because if they can get an Under Armour shirt for a couple dollars less than a Nike shirt, they may consider doing it.
After the research that Mr. Tarver and staff have done, it turns out that all the students like Brock Sonier wanted were retailers that had something clean and simple with comfortability and quality that backed up the merchandise.
Nike's just, they're pretty much sponsoring them, Nike and Under Armour. And it's pretty much the same design for every school, just with the school's different name. That's pretty much the only difference. A t-shirt, I'd make it a Nike dry fit shirt, but not the cheap ones, like the good ones, like what I'm wearing. And so you could work out in it, and it actually works and absorbs your sweat, and wear it to a sporting event like a hot baseball game, and it'll actually do something for you. Quality and comfortability is everything.
Nike or Under Armour? That seems to be the common question amongst many universities. But to the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, it will just have to remain a dilemma. For Louisiana Focus, I'm Brock Bertuzzi.
The recent publication in the Los Angeles Times revealed graphic and gruesome photos out of Afghanistan. It has raised questions: how much is too much? Seneca Broussard has the latest.
One of the photographs in question depicts members of the 82nd Airborne Division posing with Afghan police, holding the severed legs of a suicide bomber. The other appears to show the hand of a dead insurgent resting on another U.S. soldier's shoulder as the soldier smiles. Despite pleas from the Pentagon, the Los Angeles Times went forward with publication of two of the known 18 photographs. Photojournalism professor Alice Ferguson of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette finds it extremely unusual that such morbid photos would be the work of a trained photojournalist.
There definitely are some limits for the professional photojournalist of how much is too much or what is too much in terms of publishing photographs. I would be extremely surprised to find that a photojournalist took those kinds of photos because it just does not seem to me like the kind of thing somebody would do, particularly a journalist, as a joke. If they're taking pictures of a news event, of course that's very newsworthy. But if that would have been the case, I think that photojournalist would have been in touch immediately, hopefully with their editor, to say, look what's going on, what do we do?
An editor for the LA Times explained that the paper ran the photos to fulfill an obligation to readers to report vigorously on all aspects of the American mission in Afghanistan after receiving them from a U.S. soldier who sought to shed light on the current breakdown of leadership and discipline among troops. UL Lafayette professor Robert Buckman can view this issue from the perspective of a soldier at war as well as a journalist of 40-plus years, and although he strongly defends the public's right to know, in this case, he can't find a useful purpose for the paper to go through with the decision to publish photos that have the potential to put the lives of American troops in danger.
They probably felt like it was the public's right to know, but the public doesn't have the right to know every single detail of everything that happened. We did not know when Osama bin Laden was going to be killed. We didn't know where he was. We didn't know that the SEALs were going to go in to get him for obvious reasons. When it comes to endangering lives of servicemen unnecessarily, I have to tilt the balance a little bit in favor of protecting the troops over the public's right to know.
In addition to the importance of protecting the lives of American troops, Professor Ferguson points out the important ethical standards that professional journalists are expected to uphold.
Normally, that's going to be governed by professional codes of ethics from Society of Professional Journalists, from the National Press Photographers Association, as well as the codes of ethics in the business practices of the news outlet where the photojournalist is working.
Professor Buckman referenced two clauses from the Society of Professional Journalists' Code of Ethics that he found relevant to the situation at hand.
Recognize that gathering and reporting information may cause harm or discomfort. Pursuit of the news is not a license for arrogance. And the other is show good taste, avoid pandering to lurid curiosity. I think showing body parts panders to lurid curiosity.
The photos were the latest in a string of embarrassing controversies that have jeopardized relations between the United States and Afghanistan, who are currently in the midst of negotiating the withdrawal of foreign troops. U.S. Commander in Afghanistan, General John Allen, released a statement in which he strongly condemned the publication of the pictures and the actions of the soldiers within, and ensured that a full investigation is underway. For Louisiana Focus, I'm Seneca Broussard. Louisiana Focus is a production of the Communication Department in the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. It is produced in association with KRVS-FM. Today's producer is Ellen Hopper, the director is Chris Seaman, and the faculty advisor is Professor Bill Davey. I'm Seneca Broussard.
And I'm Nick Pierre. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, public radio for Acadiana. Weather for the listening area, partly sunny this afternoon with a high near 85. Well, actually, we've surpassed that. Winds from the south at 10 miles per hour. This evening, patchy fog after 2 a.m., otherwise mostly cloudy with a low of 69. On Tuesday, mostly cloudy skies with a high of 86. Currently, there are a few clouds. It's 88 here on the campus of UL Lafayette. Coming up at 4 o'clock, it's All Things Considered from NPR News. in a few minutes. We will be joining public radio. Again, public radio news at 4 p.m. This is KRVS Lafayette Lake Charles. Next up, we're going to listen to music performed by pianist Ray Chen. This is a performance of Henryk Wieniawski's Variations on an Original Theme for Violin and Piano in A Major, Opus 15. Thank you.
KRVS Lafayette, Lake Charles.
With me in the KRVS studios, I have pianist Tanya Bannister. She'll be performing in a special concert. It's a new chamber series that the Acadiana Symphony is bringing to town. This will be happening at the James Munkus Theater at the Acadiana Center for the Arts tomorrow evening, Tuesday, May 1st at 7:30 p.m. The name of the performance is French Musical Jewels, and welcome, Tanya.
Hi, thank you very much.
Now, tell us a little bit about your origins. Where are you from, first off?
That's kind of a difficult question to answer, but my mother is Japanese and my father is English. I was brought up in Hong Kong until I was about 12, and then I've kind of lived all over the place. But now I live in New York, but I'm not American. Is that enough?
That's fine. Yes, that's plenty. So when did all this begin? When did you start playing piano, actually?
I started when I was four, I performed for the first time when I was five. So,
5 years old.
Yeah, I actually have a record of it. It's a little piano competition, and I was playing a little Shostakovich waltz, and I have the comment sheet from that. I was five and a half. I was looking at it the other day, and it was the judge of it was actually someone that I'm still in touch with. He's now the head of keyboard at the Royal Academy of Music in London. Uh-huh. He was the jury for that, my first performance ever.
From there, when did you start performing professionally then?
Professionally, I suppose, consistently, I started, you know, when I was around 22, I guess, when I got management and I won a competition in New York called Concert Artist Guild. And that's, I guess, when it started to become, you know, professional, I guess, means when you start earning a living a bit, mm-hmm. right?
That's
what does that mean exactly?
Yes.
I mean, I didn't change anything particularly other than the fact then that the competition was won and management started to get me some concerts. But yeah, that's, I guess, can be classified as professional.
Now, you're part of this, I guess it's a sort of a guild of sorts, pianists for New Orleans.
No, it's not a guild. Actually, I won the competition in New Orleans right before Katrina happened.
Uh-huh.
And what year was that? 2004?
2005.
2005, that's right. And right after that happened, I just couldn't believe, you know, all the places and these wonderful, amazing people that I'd met suffering. So I, together with three other pianists that had also previously won the competition in different years, we got together and we talked, how can we help the organization? And so we ourselves organized and banded together to become what's called Pianists for New Orleans and raised $100,000 for the Musical Arts Society in New Orleans.
And this has been going on for how long?
Well, that happened just right after. We're not doing it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But for the year or two after Katrina happened, that's what we did.
I see. So I'm reading here that you've been part of you were part of the Concert Artists Guild International Competition and the New Orleans International Piano Competition. You've won those in the past?
Yeah, well, I mean, the Concert Artists Guild is a competition, a management competition, actually, that I won, which is what partly made me professional in some aspects. But and New Orleans was just another. I mean, pianists, we're like monkeys. We have to go around playing, you know, and doing competitions until we're too old to do it. If you're really lucky, you don't have to do that. And in fact, I don't think, you know, all the pianists that have massive careers now necessarily went that route. But it is a route that is or was very popular, you know, to gain some more recognition and to get out there and meet different people and different presenters.
Mm-hmm. So your program for tomorrow evening is of a program of French musical jewels. Tell us a little bit about what's in store.
There's some amazing pieces. I'm playing piece by Debussy, Images. There are three pieces in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm playing a piece by Messiaen from his Vingt Regards, which are impressions of Jesus and the Virgin Mary. And then I'm actually doing something which isn't actually exactly French. The Polish would object because I'm playing a piece by Chopin, but he's an honorary French, I suppose, because he lived in France for most of his life and never went back to Poland, but he is technically not French. But he's classified tomorrow night, at least, as a French jewel. And then I'm doing a few pieces from Children's Corner by Debussy, and then we're doing the Poulenc Wind Sextet with members of the symphony, so that should be fun.
Well, what drew you to the French composers? And
well, actually, I love playing French music. They suggested to do, you know, a French evening. So
yeah, especially us being in the Acadiana Center for the Arts. It's
yeah,
most
I guess so. So you know, I do what I'm told. You know, no, but I love the music that there's so much great music out there, and it's nice in a way to have it compact and to get into one sound world. Yet in coming from different angles, so I'm looking forward to play the pieces tomorrow night.
Well, we're definitely looking forward to hearing you again. This will be a special concert. It's part of the new chamber series that the Acadiana Symphony is performing. Now, you will be performing with members of the symphony as well, aren't
you? Yeah, I'm doing a Mozart concerto on Saturday night, one of his chamber concertos, number 14, and. It's actually a piece that I didn't know that well. It's not one of the most well-known of the concertos, but it's absolutely unique and I think has such incredible moments. I'm so happy I'm playing it, actually, because it's not something that I'm asked to play that often.
Now, do you have any recordings out available?
Yeah, I do. I have a few recordings out. I have one on Naxos, doing some Clementi sonatas, and then I have another one with some contemporary new music, although a lot of it is kind of retrospective in a way, by Sheila Silver and Christopher Tifanidis, who's a Greek composer who has had a lot of success. And then I have a new, actually, CD it's coming out in the fall, which is going to include the Mozart concerto that I'm playing on Saturday and Chopin's second concerto, but the twist is that it's going to be with string quintet, so it's going to be string quartet plus a double bass. And actually, both of these pieces and the piece that I'm playing, the Mozart on Saturday, they're basically classified as a chamber concerto. In the orchestral version, which you'll hear on Saturday, there are winds, and they'll have the full orchestral version. But the one that I'm doing, Mozart actually wrote for string quartet because he wanted it to be able to be played in a smaller, more intimate atmosphere, you know, with less instruments. So I'm going to be recording that with string quintets. It's kind of fun to be able to mold it in a way that maybe you couldn't do with an orchestra with one or two rehearsals. So that'll be out in the fall.
Any websites or anything that we can get more information about?
Yes, my name, TanyaBannister.com.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
Again, Tanya Bannister, virtuoso pianist, and will be performing at the James Bunkus Theater, Acadiana Center for the Arts, on Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. Now, that will be the solo performance?
Tomorrow night is a solo and then the wind quintet.
Yes.
With the Debussy and all the French music. And then Saturday is the full symphony concert with the Mozart concerto. I'm not sure what the rest of the program is. Actually, I think there's a Beethoven symphony.
I haven't got the information here.
But it sounded like a great program when I checked, but I get confused with different performances, what's what.
Well, again, is this your first time performing in this area?
Well, yeah, actually in Lafayette, yes, but I've played in New Orleans. I'm really happy to be back in the area.
And we're glad to have you. Again, Tanya Bannister performing, this is part of a new chamber series that the Acadiana Symphony is putting on. The performances will take place again at the James Bunkus Theater at the Acadiana Center for the Arts. For tickets, you can call 337-232-4277. Again, that's 337-232-4277, extension 1. Or simply, with your credit card, head to www.acadianasymphony.org and secure your tickets that way. Tanya, thanks so much for dropping by. We're looking forward to the concert this week.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.